We're in the middle of a series from the book of Hosea, the world's best love story. Hosea was a prophet who lived 700 years before Jesus, and he is bringing a message from God to his people, the nation of Israel. They have been unfaithful to God. So the Lord sends a message by the way of a parable about marriage. Hosea is told by God to go and marry, well, she's a loose woman. You get the idea. She's promiscuous. And as you can imagine, what results is a very messed up marriage. When you read the book of Hosea in 2017, you've got to think, this is really bizarre. This whole story is strange. I mean, these are words that we just don't hear in church. Some of this language and the idea, and it is bizarre. So now we come to chapter 3. There's a man who was a well-known pastor at the 10th Presbyterian Church in downtown Philadelphia for many years. His name was James Montgomery Boyce, and he published a series of sermons on the book of Hosea, and the title he gave to this passage was The Greatest Chapter in the Bible. Wow. Well, when we're done, you might not think it's the greatest chapter in the Bible, but I hope that you will see that its message is right up there. What's it tell us? Three things. I have a confession to make. I ripped off my outline from Tim Keller because try as I did, I just couldn't improve on what he said. So here we go. Number one, our relationship with God is like a marriage. Number two, our relationship with God is like a bad marriage. And number three, how God healed his marriage and what it cost him. Let's work through that. Number one, our relationship with God is like a marriage. That's what this text is telling us. That's what the whole book of Hosea is telling us. See how it says in verse 1 of chapter 3, go love a woman as I love the children of Israel. Now, we've already seen this in chapter 1 and 2. And the point of this parable, this living picture is, just as you, Hosea, are married, I am married, God says, I am married to my people. And the ceremony was performed at Mount Sinai under Moses, and it was a covenant wedding between you, my people, and I. So Israel and God tied the knot there at Mount Sinai. And you see this idea, this concept of marriage between God and his people in lots of places in the Old Testament. It's in the Hebrew prophets. It's in Jeremiah 2 and 3 and 4. It's in Ezekiel chapter 16. It's all through the book of Isaiah, and it's here. So God is saying you really can't understand the relationship between God and his people simply as king and subjects. You can't just understand it as shepherd and sheep. As important as those things are, God's saying, you will not understand my love for you until you see me as your bridegroom. You won't know how I see you, how I long for you, and how much I give for you unless you see me as your husband. So if you've been here, and we have a lot of guests this morning, we're glad that you're here, but if you've been here all along through chapters 1 and 2, this picture is kind of familiar by now. So let's flesh it out a bit. What does that mean? Why is this matrimonial picture so important? Well, let me give you three reasons. Number one, marriage means we take priority. The relationship between wife and husband, between guy and gal, that relationship is number one. If you're married, then your relationship to your spouse has to be the number one priority in your life. Nothing can come before it. I'm sorry what you've been told. I'm sorry what you see modeled, but your job is not number one. Your children are not number one. Your sports are not number one. Your friends are number one, not number one. If you give those other things priority, then you're going to be in trouble. But if your marriage is number one, And if your marriage is strong, your marriage is going to have strength even when everything else in your life is a mess. There's a way that it doesn't matter to your marriage. You face the world from a position of strength if your marriage is your number one priority. But if your marriage is weak, even when everything else in your life is going fine, it doesn't matter. You move out into the world from a position of weakness. There's a sense in which the strength of a man or woman's marriage sets the course for the rest of his or her life. So, when God says, I am your husband, you've got to see our relationship as a marriage. He's saying, in a matter of speaking, we have to be the number one priority. He's saying, I can't just be an add-on to your life. I'm not a vitamin supplement. My relationship with you and your relationship with me has to be priority number one. Nothing can come before that. Everything else comes second. Second thing that this matrimonial picture shows us is that marriage means we know each other intimately. There's no relationship on earth that is as close and as knowing as marriage is. Your spouse knows you in ways that nobody else on earth knows you. Now, you know from experience, don't you? You can hide yourself. You can hide your true self from your boss. And you can hide a lot of things about yourself from your kids and your even from your girlfriend. I mean, she doesn't really find out about you until it's too late, right? You can hide lots of things about yourself from those people, but you can't hide it from your wife. You can't hide it from your husband. Your spouse will see who you really are because that relationship is so intimate. She sees your heart. He knows your soul. It's also intimate because of the depth and a passion and love that enters into that relationship. The way that you express love in marriage is deep. It involves the whole being. So God is saying, I want us, you and I, God's saying, I want us to have a relationship like that. I don't want to just know you formally. I don't want to just know you on the surface. I want to be involved in every inch of your life. I want to see you in your PJs. I want to see you when you're at your very worst. I want to watch you when you wake up. I don't want you to to just hold back any part of your life from me. I want the whole thing. So God's saying, I don't want you to just know about me. I want you to know me, to experience me. I want you to find out how much I really love you. I want you to be my friend. By the way, that's the key to a great marriage, is a husband and wife who are best friends. And God says, I want you to be my friend. I want us to connect in a deep personal level like a loving husband and wife do in a good marriage, how they ought to connect. Now, the third thing this matrimonial picture should show us about our walk with God is that marriage, it changes your life. You're never going to be the same, are you, after you get married. Your spouse has the ability, because of the priority of that relationship and the intimacy of that relationship, to reprogram your life like no other human relationship. Think about it. Your spouse has a way, like nobody else, to change the way that you see yourself. Your spouse has a way to change your self-worth. Here's why. Suppose a guy whom you barely know comes up to you after church this morning, and he says, you have got to be the kindest person ever. What are you thinking? What am I thinking? I'll tell you what I'm thinking. Fooled you. If you only knew me, if you only saw me at my worst. But suppose you're husband said that to you. Suppose your wife comes up to you and says, I just want you to know you are really kind and gentle. You are, I mean, you've got to be the kindest man I ever knew. Whoa. I mean, that means something. That's got weight. I'm not going to say fooled you. That just melts me. That affirms me. That will heal me of anything. And if your spouse tells you that you're beautiful, when everybody else in the world says you're ugly, when your spouse says that you're beautiful, you feel beautiful because your spouse has power. Power to build you up. Power to change you. Nothing in my 58 years of living on this earth has changed me like Mary and Catherine. Just nothing. Nothing. I mean, I wouldn't be here. I don't even know what I would have come or who I would have developed into, but I know that I am the man today that I am because I married her. She changed me. She gave me confidence. She loves me. She built into me a belief that God could do something with me. When Jesus says, I am the bridegroom, you know what he's saying? He's saying, I'm the guy standing up at the front of the church looking for his radiant bride to come in the door. And when she comes down the aisle, she is the most beautiful creature on earth to my eyes. And the bride, she sees that in his eyes. And it changes her. Being married to Jesus transforms you. Tim Keller. God says, the most incredible moments and the most incredible marriages in the history of the world are just dim hints of my love for you. If you grasp that, and if you come to understand with both your mind and your heart, my delight in you, and that kind of love in you, that will be the most life-changing power in your life. Nothing can be more powerful than that. God says, until you understand me, and not just as your king, not just as your father, not just as your shepherd, until you understand me as your husband, as your bridegroom, you have no idea who I am and what we could be together. So the first thing we learn from the book of Hosea about our relationship with God is that it is like a marriage. Second thing we learn, our relationship with God is like a bad marriage. That's the second thing we learn in this book, in this passage. Look at verse 1 again, Hosea chapter 3, verse 1. And the Lord said to me, go again and love a woman who is loved by another man. He's pointing back here to chapter 1 and the whole story. Go take for yourself a wife of whoredom and have children of whoredom. And just think how shocking that is. Hey, preacher man, go take back that loose woman. Go marry that talk of the town. See Gomer? She's the one for you. That adulterous woman is going to be a picture of my people. She's going to absolutely break your heart. She's going to trample all over your spirit. She's going to betray you. She's going to be unfaithful to you. And I want you, Hosea, I want you to love her. I want you to marry her. I'm inclined to say, what kind of a matchmaker is God? So why does God do this? Well, he does it to breathe redemptive energy into Gomer's life through Hosea. God puts them together so she can get grace through Hosea, the truth through Hosea. And he does it also to make Hosea understand in his guts, understand what God is experiencing with Israel. Hosea knows intellectually, he knows that Israel is chasing after idols. He knows intellectually that Israel is unfaithful. But he's going to feel it here now. He's going to feel it here now. I want you to know, God's saying, I want you to know what I've been going through to love you. You don't get it. You don't see your sin as something hurtful. You don't view your sin as a slash at my heart. So we're in the fourth week here in Hosea, and by now most of you know the story. Hosea marries Gomer, and immediately she's unfaithful. She has three kids, and we don't even know who the daddy is. And Gomer becomes a prostitute. And we arrive at chapter 3, and things get even worse. Gomer's now a slave. She's up for sale. Can you imagine your wife up for sale? There's a couple possible reasons. One is that she's accumulated so many debts, she can't pay them off while living. She's the prodigal wife, and she's just spent it all and gone into hock. Or maybe her pimp thinks she's used up. He's cutting his losses. He's going to get rid of her. He's going to dump her. Either way, she's made herself to the slave market, and it's really bad. This is really, really bad. This is as bad and as ugly as it can possibly get. So here we have in chapter 3, Hosea's really, really, really bad marriage. God says, that's an image of what my relationship with human beings is like. Because he says, chapter 3, verse 1, go again, love a woman who's loved by another man, and there's an adulteress. Even as the Lord loves the children of Israel, though they turn to other gods and love the cakes of raisins, that cake of raisins thing is talking about offerings to false gods and false idols. And he's saying, you love the things you worship, and you're giving it what you have away to the things that you worship. When God says, your bad marriage, your betrayal of when your wife goes and puts herself in the arms of other lovers, that's exactly what happens when I love my people and I love human beings. They put other things before me and they worship other gods before me, and that's exactly the same thing. God says, you need to understand two things. I'm putting Hosea through all of this so you get two things. The impact of your unfaithfulness on me. When a king sees a subject breaking a rule, that makes him angry. When a shepherd sees a sheep straying, shepherds say, oh, you know, sheep. Sheep are going to be sheep. When a father sees a child disobeying him, that makes him angry. But when the person you love most in your life is putting him or herself in the arms of another lover, that's different. That's something on another level entirely. God says, until you understand, some of you have been through this. Some of you can relate instinctually, personally, and virtually all of us know somebody who's been through this, somebody personally who's been through this kind of thing. There's almost nothing like it. Yet God says, until you've been through that, or you know somebody who's been through that, you don't understand the impact of your wrongdoing and your coldness and your wayward heart on me. God says, you're stabbing me in the heart. You need to understand how addicted and enslaved you are to other things. When you read about Gomer in chapter 2, you see that she's out of control. She's basically a sex addict. She's out of control. She can't stop herself. And when God talks about this image, he talks to his people and says, you're like a bride who's gone away from me. And here's what God's saying. What does it mean to follow another God? It means that something other than God is most important in your life. Something other than God has taken priority. It means making money turns your crank more. That's more important to you. Or your self-image is more important to you. Who you are, that gives you more joy than your relationship with God. Or having children. That's really what lights you up, your kids and your family. That's more important to you than God. Or getting married, or being married, or your looks, or your achievements, or maybe it's some great political cause, marching on the White House, as they've done three times in the last week. Maybe that's really what lights you up. If there's anything more important than God in your life, that's your real God. That's who you're sleeping with. That's who you're unfaithful to. So here's what God's saying. You know how sex addicts are. You know something about sexual addiction because it's so prevalent in our day. Sexual addiction is that you have an inner emptiness. Because of that inner emptiness, you're driving toward a false intimacy. The lies and those false promises, and you're driven toward all sorts of sexual practices that won't satisfy. And God has the audacity here to say, if you make anything more important than me, whether that be your career or a good cause or your family or getting married or trying to get married, you are doing the very same thing with your soul that a sex addict does with his or her body. It can't save you. It won't satisfy you. You're a slave to it. You're Gomer. I'm Gomer. God says, until you understand the absolute devastation of having the person you love most betray you, be unfaithful to you, you don't understand how I feel about your waywardness and about your sin. You don't even understand your own heart and how addicted and enslaved you are to other things that can never save you, and they will drive you right into the ground. So we learn that our relationship with God is like a bad marriage. Third thing this passage teaches us. How God healed his marriage and what it cost him. So what does God tell Hosea to do? Verse 1, chapter 3, verse 1. Go again. So it appears that she's left him. She's prostituted herself. She's up for sale. God's saying, you have 1,000 reasons to divorce her. Don't do that. Go get her. Hosea's not here to be an inspiring example. The moral of this story is not that love conquers all. That's not what's going on here. It's saying God conquers all. God's saying, let's show the world what I'm like. Go get that woman and bring her home. Imagine the scene in all of its ugliness. Gomer is tied up in the slave block. She is humiliatingly stripped so that all of the buyers can see the product that they're bidding on. Then, someone on the edge of the crowd notices the preacher is there. Hosea's there. And can't you hear the gossip? Just listen. Can't you hear the gossip? He's come to see that she gets what she deserves. He's come to see her get her punishment. And the bidding starts. Someone says, I'll give you 10 pieces of silver for her. Now, a decent slave, according to the Bible, a decent slave would sell for 30 pieces. They're not going there. Somebody else says, I'll give you 12. Then Hosea shouts, I'll give you 15. Somebody else says, well, I'll give you 15 and a homer of barley. Hosea says, I'll give you 15 pieces of silver and a homer and a half of barley. Roughly half price for a slave. The gavel sounds. Hosea pushes forward to buy his wife. He doesn't stop to punish her. He buys her. To redeem her. That's what he says in chapter 3, verse 3. He buys her back. And what Hosea is saying is something like this. I have bought you. And now I want you to live with me. I want you, Gomer, I want you to be faithful to me. And I promise that whether you're faithful to me or not, I will be faithful to you. We are together. Now you got to be thinking, how could any man do that? I mean, how could any man go before the crowd, a crowd that knew him, no less, and buy his wife back, nurse her back to purity? How could anybody do that? Well, the answer to that is found in chapter 3, verse 1, which is one of the great sentences of the Bible. Go again, love a woman who's loved by another man and is an adulteress, even as the Lord loves the children of Israel, though they turn to other gods. The reason that Hosea is able to love Gomer as he does is because the love of God is in his heart, and Hosea is playing the part with Gomer that God played with you. life and that God has played with me. So Hosea pays for Gomer. That's a lot more than 15 pieces of silver. He's paying a relational price, a deep financial price. He's paying a sexual price. It's deep emotional work. Of course, you know that if you love somebody who's got problems, anytime you love somebody who's got problems, it's a substitutionary sacrifice. And the whole idea is that Hosea is an image. He's an analog. He's a parable of God. Hosea was in love. God is in love. Hosea has been betrayed. God has been betrayed. Hosea pays an enormous price to get her back. Where would God? Wait a minute. When does that happen to God? Hosea loves and it costs. How does God pay a price for us? Well, even though this is the Hebrew Scriptures, even though this is the Old Testament, this book of Hosea cries out with the question, where does God come to the marketplace? Where does God pay a price to get his people back? And the answer is in verse 4 and 5. And it's a little cryptic, but it's there. It's a prophecy. And it says there's going to be a period of time in which Israel is cold and away from everything. But eventually, it says in verse 5, afterward, the children of Israel shall return and seek the Lord their God. Their relationship is going to be healed, and they're going to seek David their king. Now, wait a minute. By this time, by the time the book of Hosea is written, David's been dead for a long time. So he has to be talking about a descendant of David, and he is. Jesus is the descendant. Jesus is the bridegroom. Jesus is the answer to all of the riddles. In Jesus Christ, God entered the world. He entered the marketplace. He entered the slave market. He clothed us. He covered our nakedness with his righteousness. And because on the cross, Jesus Christ died and paid the price to buy us away from our enslavements. So God actually has the audacity to say, I'm like the bridegroom, seeing that bride come down the aisle who wants to sweep her into his arms and wants to say, I want to give you the world. I want to lay down my life for you. And Jesus says, I really am like that bridegroom. I am the bridegroom and I see you and I love you. It's not just talk, God says. In Jesus Christ, I did it. I laid down my life for you. I did the thing cosmically and visibly that you have to do every time you love somebody with needs. I was a substitutionary sacrifice. Your sin, your evil, your problems came onto me so that my righteousness could be put on you, so you could be clothed in that. You understand that? When you understand that, you understand how much I love you, God says. When you understand that, you understand how much I delight in you. So, to the degree that you understand that, to the degree that you take that into the middle of your life, this has the most life-changing, potent power of anything in the world. Let me close with two things. First, are you suffering? Is everything going wrong in your life? Are you in the middle of some cataclysmic meltdown of everything that you had hoped and dreamed for? Maybe God's making you into a prophet. Think about that. Maybe you're playing the role of Hosea. Maybe God's turning you into somebody who can speak into other people's lives. And the only way he can do it is like he did with Hosea. The only way he can do it is put you through unimaginable suffering and pain and difficulty so that the glory of God, like the blind man, so that the glory of God could be manifest in your life. That's how he did it to Hosea. Maybe he's doing that for you. Second thing, God does not love you. Hosea 3 teaches, God does not love you because of what you do. He loves you in spite of what you do or who you are. When you understand how much he loves you, you will respond to him with love and praise and sacrifice and service. But mark it well, God does not love you because of what you are. God does not love you because of what you do. God always loved you in spite of what you are and in spite of what you do. And that is a hard lesson to learn. Almost all of us enter into the Christian life with the old bookkeeping mentality. The bookkeeping mentality, now this is how almost all of us, this isn't unique to you or me, this is almost all of us come at the Christian life with the idea that I do certain things for God, and then God will do certain things for me, and then in a way he will reward me. That's heresy. That's not Christianity. That is not the gospel. That is not the truth of God. God doesn't bless us or reward us because of what we do. It's in spite of what we do. So let's just suppose that you decide today that you're going to give your life to God in some distant place. You're going to go to Paraguay. You're going to go to Brazil. You're going to go to Timbuktu in Central Africa, and you're going to spend your life there. You do that, but God is not going to love you any more than he loves you right now. If you're going to be radically generous and give your money to our local church or to a Christian organization or give your money to someone serving Christ, maybe you give it all to them. Make that kind of sacrifice. God would not love you any more than he loves you right now. You stand beneath the cross, and Jesus Christ died to win you, to buy you out of the slave market. And when you understand that love, you respond in wonder and praise and worship. And when theologians talk about this concept, they call it grace. You say to a theologian, well, what do you mean? You know, we sing about grace, and we talk about grace, and you hear Christians talking about grace all the time. And when you ask a theologian, or, you know, we question Aaron at the ordination, what's grace? And maybe Aaron would say something along the lines, well, grace is unmerited favor. Well, what does that mean? That means that all the good things God gives to us, he gives us to us without merit. There's nothing we could do for it. Hear it well. Mark it down. Put this down in your soul where you put sacred truth. God does not love you because of what you are. God does not love you because of what you do. He loves you in spite of what you are and in spite of what you do. And when that dawns on you and you realize the unconditional love of God, no strings attached, then that's when you will respond with love and worship and praise and service. So I pick up Hosea chapter 3, and I read this shocking story, and then I realize I'm Gomer. I'm the one who plays the harlot. I'm the whore, to use Old Testament language. And Jesus is my bridegroom. He looks on me with love. 700 years later, there was another woman, and she was condemned before the crowd to pay for her shameful crimes, caught in the act of adultery, the very act. What a shameful thing for a young Jewish woman, in the very act. I mean, John writes it in a way that we just, whoa, the very act. What do you say, Jesus? Well, Jesus didn't have to say a whole lot, did he? In a few moments, that crowd was gone. Jesus stood up and said to her, woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you? She said, no one, Lord. And Jesus said, neither do I condemn you. Go and from now on, sin no more. No more whoring, no more sleeping around. You're living with me and I'm living with you, spiritually speaking, you understand? How could he do that? What gave him the right just to let her off? You've been reading in the paper about this creep from Michigan State who's molested all those girls. What if the judge just said, let him go. Just let him off. Go and sin no more. There'd be a riot. Jesus doesn't do that. He let her go because he was condemned in her place, in my place, and in your place. So I bought her. That's how God healed his marriage. That's what it cost him. You were bought with a price, therefore glorify God. Do you see how much he loves you? You see what he did for you? You see what he saw in you? He loved you anyway? This is the great Savior, Jesus Christ. Let's stand together. Would you bow with me? Some of you here this morning and you have never begun a relationship with Jesus Christ. You have never repented of your sins. The offer of the gospel stands true. That is, Jesus Christ, God in the flesh, came to earth. He died, was buried, and rose again to buy you out of the slave market. Will you trust him and turn to him in faith? Father, it is our prayer that we would see with open eyes your love for us, that we would be driven to you in love and service and praise to give you glory because you have bought us for yourself. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.